Blog Talk Radio.
Because I am. Right off the bat here, we'll get into corruption, because that's how we start every show nowadays. Bill O'Reilly, a little later on, actually we'll do with the second story. Bill O'Reilly knows who and what to blame for the Syrian refugee crisis and the fact that the Middle East is in turmoil. It's basically the exact opposite of who to blame. And what to blame. Naturally, he wants more of the problem to be the solution because he's Bill O'Reilly, and that's clearly built into his genetics. Bobby Jindal is still running for president. Nobody knows that. Even his family's like, what? I didn't know you were still running. And he shoves his foot in his mouth on the issue of Planned Parenthood. Wait until you hear what Planned Parenthood gets the blame for. That's an interesting thing. And as we move along, we got our buddy David Pakman covering a troubling story about NSA spying, or just spying in general, I should say, and the fact that your civil liberties are going away, man, and they're probably already not there. And later on, the rise of the non-religious. That's something that'll put a smile on your face. They went to Harvard University, or I should say pollsters went to Harvard University, and they found out that, hey, all these people are non-religious, so that's fun. And I got a whole bunch of stuff sprinkled in today's show, including, yes, I somehow managed to fit in a story about a penis. Penis enlargement surgery gone wrong, because that's a new thing now. I didn't even, in all seriousness, I didn't even know until maybe, what, a few months ago that penis enlargement surgery was something that could be done. I never got the fucking memo, but apparently it can be done, and oftentimes a bunch of people who aren't surgeons try to do it, and they fuck it up. All right, so let's get started here, and we're going to kick it off with a story coming out of California, and it's about corruption. A perfect example of the ugliness of politics came out of California this week. Think Progress has a perfect case of big money ruining good legislation. So they say the following, quote, California Democrats dropped a major component of their ambitious climate change legislation on Wednesday after a group of so-called moderate Democratic holdouts threatened to spell the end for the bill. They continue, the legislation affected was Senate Bill 350, which originally aimed for a 50% reduction in petroleum use in cars and trucks, a 50% increase in energy efficiency in buildings, and a goal of 50% of state utilities power coming from renewable energy all by 2030. On Wednesday, lawmakers scrapped the goal of a 50% reduction in petroleum use in cars and trucks. California Senate President Kevin DeLeon, who authored the legislation, said Wednesday that a major lobbying campaign by the oil industry was largely to blame for the doubt that had emerged over the bill. All right, so let's understand this here. You have California Democrats basically doing the right thing and getting aggressive on the issue of climate change and on the issue of the environment to the point where they say 50% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions, 50% increase in renewable energy, and we're going to do it all by 2030. Let's put our nose to the grindstone here and get to work. It looked like it was going to do all right. It looked like it might pass. But then the oil and gas lobby went to town, did an ad campaign, an ad blitz, got their hands on other politicians, so-called moderate Democrats as well, and apparently threatened money for future elections. And then as a result of it, we have a compromise, namely, they made the bill worse. What's so frustrating about this is, this looks like a kind of proposal, the original proposal was a kind of proposal, that's kind of like the bare minimum we could do at this point because of how bad climate change is getting and all the new studies that are coming out that saying the likely scenario is now worse than the previous worst-case scenario that was predicted. So it's getting really, really bad, and the predictions are really, really bad. And here you have Democrats stepping up to the plate and basically doing the bare minimum with their strongest proposal, and then that gets chipped away at. And it gets chipped away at not because of principled disagreement or scientific disagreement or question marks as to how we're going to get this done. No, the plan was there. It was all laid out. But it was the oil and gas lobby. It was big money which stepped in and said, we're going to kill this because this affects our profit. This affects our bottom line, and we can't have that. Exactly the problem with politics in America today. This is not the way that a democracy is supposed to function. This is not the way our government is supposed to function at the federal level or the state level. And there's a reason why we drag our feet on issue after issue. It's not because the politicians are just significantly dumber than the overall population. It's that they have a poor incentive structure where oftentimes they actively avoid doing the right thing because that means more money in their campaign coffers. So this is a horrible thing here, and we're so used to it at this point. I mean, this is a story that Think Progress covered it. Are you going to hear this story anywhere else? No, you're not. I mean, you hear it here. Perhaps you'll hear it on TYT. Maybe you'll get Tom Hartman, David Pakman, one of those guys will pick it up, maybe. But by and large, will this be heard on CNN? Will this be heard on MSNBC? Will this be heard anywhere else, anywhere in the mainstream? The answer is no. And it's the biggest problem we face. That's the most frustrating part of all this. It's the biggest problem we face. But we don't talk about it because it's so ingrained in the system that nobody bats a fucking eyelash. I mean, the end result is we're not going to get anything of what we want, not just with climate change legislation, but, I mean, just to give another example here, 80% of the American people want to raise the minimum wage, including a majority of Republicans. We haven't gotten it done. Why? Take a fucking guess. The only group of people that are against a minimum wage increase are the corporations and the billionaires, and they're the ones who pay the politicians. So we don't get what we want, even though the overwhelming majority of us want it. Need I continue? I mean, I could give you issue after issue. Universal background checks for gun purchases where we close the gun show loophole. We don't even have that, man, and that's over 90% of the American people want that. A majority of Republicans and a majority of grassroots NRA members are in favor of that as well. Everybody wants a background check, but it's blocked. Why? Because the leadership of the NRA and the gun manufacturers pay the politicians, pay the Republicans in this case, and they block any legislation that moves us in the right direction. And again, whether it's issues of war or you name it, this is the dynamic at work. In this case, it happens to be on the state level, but you're seeing firsthand what the problem is. There really is only one way to fix it, and it's to get clean elections. And that's what Wolfpack is working on. That's what Move to Amend is working on. That's what a bunch of different groups are working on. And if we don't fix this issue, we're never going to get systemic reform. We will only be tweaking around the edges. Honestly, the best kind of president you'll ever get if you don't change the system is President Obama. Like, he's as good as you can get while functioning within this overly corrupt system. But I think his policies demonstrate that. So, like, we got Obamacare. Well, Obamacare, yeah, it does, gives more people health care, but it's still a very pro-corporate proposal, and when implemented, the insurance companies love it because they have a monopoly now and they can get – everybody has to go buy from private insurance companies. That's one of the main reasons why I was able to get passed, is that it was originally a right-wing proposal. Dodd-Frank, we re-regulated Wall Street. Yeah, but there are so many loopholes in the legislation. Why are there so many loopholes in the legislation? Because it was really only reform in name. It wasn't FDR-style reform. So, you know, oh, he does a little bit of change. Well, that's unfortunately the most change you can expect when all the politicians in the Democratic and Republican Party are bought off. So we need to change it, and we need to get to work on that. You guys know the deal. You hear Cenk talk about it pretty much every day, but it's true. You got to go to wolf-pack.com, and that's where they're fighting, man. They're trying to do the right thing here. They're trying to get the country back, and, you know, I support that 100%. By the way, I should mention that we're planning a shirt drive at some point. I don't have any of the details yet. I don't have any of that stuff yet, so don't even bother tweeting and asking me, because my answer will be, I don't know yet. I don't make the final decisions for stuff like this. Lilith does, but we're going to do a shirt drive where we'll half the money will go towards Wolfpack, and the other half the money we're going to give to Lilith, because Lilith does so much for the show, and she does it for free. And, you know, I think it's a good way to show appreciation for what she does, is to do a shirt drive and let her keep some of the proceeds, basically as payment for doing all this work that she does for the show. And the other half will go towards Wolfpack, and hopefully we'll get enough shirts, sell enough shirts where we can make a dent, man. We can make a dent, and we can help a little bit. We did that once before. We did a shirt drive once before, and if I'm not mistaken, I think we gave all of the proceeds the last time to Wolfpack, and this was when the show had, I don't even know, maybe 20,000 or 40,000 subs, so this was like a while ago, and we sold a pretty good number even back then, so, you know, now the show is way bigger than it was then, so who knows, man. We might sell too many. We don't know how to get them all out. But anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself here. Let's move along and go to Bill O'Reilly. All right. He's going to go off on foreign policy here. What the fuck else is new? You're going to find out. Bill O'Reilly knows who and what to blame for the turmoil in the Middle East and the Syrian refugee crisis. Let's watch.
The whole fiasco shines a spotlight, though, on President Obama's foreign policy, which is a disaster.
Mm.
As you know, millions of refugees are fleeing the Middle East and Africa, going to Europe, asking for asylum. There's no way to stop this mass migration, which will change the European continent dramatically. Most of these people are Muslims who are simply trying to survive. The world was stunned when a picture of a three-year-old Syrian boy was published. He drowned in the Mediterranean Sea as his family tried to reach the Greek island of Kos. The boy's mother and five-year-old brother also drowned. Now, this is happening because the USA and Western Europe retreated from the Middle East. Once President Obama removed all American forces from Iraq, ISIS moved in and chaos broke out. The president has never, never acknowledged that his policy of disengagement has led to thousands of people being murdered and the catastrophe we are now seeing in Europe.
That's rich. That's rich. So it's Obama's fault, and it's the fault of the disengagement of America. We weren't hawkish enough. We didn't intervene enough in the mind of Bill O'Reilly. He always takes the truth, flips it on its head, and says it arrogantly. That's so sad, and that's so ahistorical. Now, clearly, the situation in the Middle East and the situation in Syria, we're dealing with a very complex situation. There's a lot of different factors that go into it. There's a lot of different factors that go into the entire region, which explain why some areas are in turmoil, which explain why there were revolutions going on, and why there's fighting, and why there's all these problems. But certainly the solution is not more of the problem. See, Bill, at least in part, the United States is to blame for the turmoil, because we engaged in the region, because we intervened in the region, and because we screwed up the power dynamic and created power vacuums. That's not just my opinion. That's a fact. If you talk to any historian or any expert in the Middle East, they'll tell you that. I mean, it basically all started with the war in Iraq, or this, you know, current turmoil that we're dealing with now. Because what exactly happened with the war in Iraq? So the U.S. went in there, we toppled Saddam Hussein, the Sunni Ba'athist leader of Iraq, and then the Shiites and Maliki went into power. Now, when you de-Ba'athified the government, got rid of all the Sunni Ba'athists, you pissed off that entire population. The Shiites, who were repressed for a long time, they started repressing the Sunnis, further radicalizing the population. The U.S. invasion and killing of civilians further radicalized the population. You stirred up the Sunni-Shia tensions, which Saddam, of all people, actually had somewhat under control. And then you made it so that ISIS, the monstrosity, rose out of the power vacuum. And as we've detailed on the show in the past, it was the marrying of former Saddam generals, Sunni Ba'athist generals, with radical Sunni fundamentalists that created ISIS. ISIS would not have been able to have territorial success in the region if it wasn't for Saddam's generals, because Saddam's generals actually know what the fuck they're doing in terms of military strategy and taking over territory and stuff like that. The religious lunatics are simply religious lunatics, and they didn't know what the fuck they were doing. So, particularly for the region of Iraq, we fucked it up. Now, it gets much more complicated when you look in other regions. When you look at Libya and Egypt and Syria and places like that. But for sure, one of the reasons why it's a mess today is that the United States and the West propped up sometimes comical dictators, and we gave them money, we gave them weapons. They repressed their populations, further radicalizing and pissing off their populations, and that led to revolutions, and unfortunately the revolutions were fundamentalist and religious in nature. Now, some people say, well, you got to blame the population because that ideology is fucked up. That's partly true, that it matters who's there after a revolution to set up a better system, and when you're dealing with religious fundamentalists, you know, their ideology is wrong, so that's going to be a problem. But it's also the case that a lot of that radicalization came about as a result of these crazy dictators, whether it's Mubarak or whether it's Gaddafi, going so over the top in their repression of the societies that you push them into the arms of the fundamentalists who said, well, at least I'm on your side. You know, at least I'm going to help you try to take your country back. And we can have our own country, we can have freedom, and we just got to get rid of this crazy, you know, strongman who's in control now. So again, there are multiple factors that go into it. It's very complex, and you can't sum it all up in a little segment like I'm doing right now. But what we know for sure is what Bill O'Reilly is calling for is more of the problem. He's saying disengagement was the problem. No, if anything, engagement was the problem. When we went into the region in the first place and started fucking with shit, that was the problem. I mean, again, to go back to the example of Iraq, you do realize that Iraq's only been a country since, what, the 1930s? But Britain draw the borders on a map and basically told the Sunnis, the Shias, and the Kurds, all right, you're in one country now. They're looking at each other like, well, I don't fucking like these guys, and they don't like me. I don't feel, you know, like this is a country. This is a fake country. You made it up. And then as a result of that, that has helped lead to the sectarian conflict. Again, some of it you can blame on the individuals and on the religious ideology. I'm with you on that if that's the camp that you're in. But it certainly didn't help when the West drew the borders, the arbitrary borders, said, okay, now you guys are all countrymen, just so that we can go in there and take the oil, and we supported the oppressive dictators who continue to keep those people down. So, I mean, look, man, Bill O'Reilly basically has it exactly wrong when he tries to blame it on Obama and when he tries to blame it on disengagement. The only thing Obama should, take the blame for is not for disengaging too much, it's for continuing to engage too much. I mean, I would say, let's get out of the region completely. Now, is that going to solve every problem? Of course not. There's still going to be some fighting, there's still going to be, you know, civil wars in some regions like Syria. But that's the best thing we could do at this point, because I certainly don't want to have blood on my hands. And with Bill O'Reilly's approach, we do have blood on our hands, and we continue to piss people off. I want to make it so that it's wholly irrational for anybody in the Middle East to blame the U.S. for anything. As of right now, that's not the case. Any reasonable person in the Middle East can and should, in many respects, blame the U.S. for certain problems. If we weren't there, how can they blame us? How can they blame us? So let's get out and, you know, whatever happens, happens in the region. And, again, it's not going to be perfect, but we've proven time and time again that we make the problem worse when we're there. Okay. All right, let's go to Bobby Jindal, and then we'll take a break here. But we're pivoting to the issue of Planned Parenthood. Bobby Jindal is inexplicably still running for president. So he went on some irrelevant Ohio radio show where he proceeded to blame on Planned Parenthood all of the problems in Louisiana.
So this is from the Register piece. Louisiana has the sixth highest rate of teen births, according to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. In 2011, 2,000 Louisiana teens aged 17 or under gave birth. Then they move on to sexually transmitted diseases, and they say Louisiana's terrible in that. Then they move on to poverty, ranking below the national average, blah, 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 blah. So what they're saying is Planned Parenthood doesn't work.
That's exactly right. You took the words out of my mouth. That they're doing such a great job. Why are these things better? So we should cancel their contract for no other reason, just that they're awful at what they do. But
lack of performance.
That's exactly right.
That's adorable. No, it's not that Planned Parenthood doesn't work, Bobby. It's that you don't work. You have no clue what the fuck you're doing. The guy just went through a whole bunch of facts about how Louisiana's in a shitty place right now. Poverty rates higher, a lot of STDs, this problem, that problem, and Bobby Jindal's like, I blame my state, and then I'll put the finger at somebody else. You're the governor, dipshit. You're not responsible for some of that, at least in part. He's like, I blame Planned Parenthood. You've been cutting Planned Parenthood. They go on to explain this in an article on Right Wing Watch. They're like, wait, you've been cutting Planned Parenthood. These problems have been getting worse, and you're like, fucking Planned Parenthood. You just cut Planned Parenthood, and the problems are getting worse. You have it totally backwards. God, these guys are so silly. They just take their pet cause, their pet issue, and they pin everything on that. You know, who's the boogeyman today? The gays. Blame the gays for this, blame the gays for that. Who's the boogeyman tomorrow? The Muslims. Blame the Muslims for this, blame the Muslims for that. And look in this case. Everything is Planned Parenthood's fault. Now, let me give you some facts. Here are the results of some studies that we've covered on the show, Secular Talk, within the past year or 2 years. Family planning centers prevented 760,000 abortions in 2010. What happened, guys? I thought that you dislike abortions. Well, then you should love Planned Parenthood because they prevented 760,000 abortions in the year 2010 alone. Free birth control cuts abortion rate 75%. Another study. Family planning cuts deficit $13.6 billion every year. Thought you guys were fiscal conservatives. But somehow you hate family planning centers and Planned Parenthood, even though that helps you with that issue. And finally, sex education delays teen sex. That's for school curriculums. That's for, you know, the education that happens at places like Planned Parenthood. So all of the things that you say you care about are fixed or improved greatly with Planned Parenthood. But you want to live in fucking Narnia, you want to live in Candyland where you get to get rid of Planned Parenthood, but at the same time that happens, we also want to eliminate abortion or reduce the number of abortions, we want to reduce the number of STDs, we want to do all these different things. No, the solution to all of those problems that you say you care about, the solution is Planned Parenthood. You just don't want to see it, or you refuse to see it because you don't care about facts, you don't care about reality. Everything comes down to emotional comfort and contradictory beliefs. Okay. Let's take a break. When we come back, our buddy David Pakman did a segment recently covering a troubling issue regarding privacy. Then we have Jim Sensenbrenner, well-known clown, talks at this goofy Planned Parenthood hearing that they're doing where they're trying to blame everything else on Planned Parenthood. I got a few clips from that. And later on, a hardware store owner sells no gays allowed merchandise. Oh, I am going to have a gleeful time mocking that one. All right, stay right there. Son of a bitch. All right, we're back, guys. If I could find the clip, let's talk a little bit about your right to privacy. Our friends at the David Pakman Show did a segment recently covering a troubling issue regarding privacy. Let's watch.
I've talked to you in the past about Stingray police surveillance. This is a class of surveillance device known as a cell site simulator, and it pretends to be a cell phone tower in order to extract metadata and location information, and in some cases even the content of phones that are connected to it. There are 2,000 cases that could be overturned as the first motion for a retrial has been filed accusing the state attorney's office and the police of deliberate and willful misrepresentation of this technology used as Stingray. Now, when I say the state's attorney's office in 2,000 cases, I'm not talking about nationally, Lewis. I'm talking about within the Baltimore Police Department alone. We're looking at 2,000 cases that could be overturned because of misuse of this secret surveillance method.
Even after all of this, even if every single case here is overturned, thrown out, or whatever, I guarantee you police departments are still going to try to find ways, legal loopholes, to be using equipment like this because it just makes their job so much easier.
And the problem is abuse of authority. That's always been the problem, and that's why we have a system set up in the first place. That's why we have a process set up in the first place. The whole idea of checks and balance, the whole idea of getting a warrant is so that you don't have law enforcement and you don't have politicians and you don't have people in power basically looking at whoever they want and trying to get dirt or information on whoever they want for whatever bad motivations they may have. I mean, it might be something in their private life. It might be somebody that they disagree with politically who might threaten their power. And the list goes on of all the different conceivable problems. I mean, one of the biggest problems and one of the biggest things we were afraid of was once the NSA starts taking everybody's information and everybody's metadata, they say they're only going to use it for terrorism, but are they really only going to use it for terrorism? And the reality is, as we learned probably a little over a year ago now, they took that information and they started giving it to the DEA. So the NSA would take your metadata, take your information, give it to the DEA, and the DEA would then use that information to crack down on, this is the slippery slope that we said was going to happen. This is mission creep, essentially, on the part of the NSA and on the part of the surveillance network and the government. They always start with something that nobody can disagree with in principle. Hey, we're just going after terrorists. Are you for terrorists? Don't tell me you're for terrorists. Are you for terrorists? We're just going to go after terrorists. So, hey, let us, you know, try to track just the people who we're supposed to track. But right away, we should have nipped it in the bud because the system we had set up before, it's not like they couldn't try to track terrorists. Of course they could. They just had to do it by getting a warrant. They just had to do it by going through the proper steps in the system. And now, any checks and balances we have, like, for example, the FISA court, which signs off on a lot of this stuff, is just a fucking rubber stamp, man. They don't actually – I mean, we read the numbers one time before on air. It's, you know, well over 95% or something of all the claims. The FISA court is like, yeah, oh, yeah, you could look into that, man. No problem. And the laundry list of the abuses of the NSA goes on and on. I mean, they look at their love interests. People at the NSA, it was so common they had a name for it, Love Int. It was short for Love Intelligence, where they would look at their ex-boyfriends, ex-girlfriends. They would go through everything, and they were abusing their power in the exact way that civil libertarians said from day one that they would do it. And now they're pointing out, you know, the ship sailed. The ship has sailed. You know, we're at a place where different police departments are using fake cell phone towers to get your information. Then they use that information to prosecute you. And David Pakman goes on to explain that they had to sign non-disclosure agreements, these police departments. And what that means is when a defense attorney pushes them and says, where did you get that information from? They would have to drop the case before they would be able to admit, oh, I got this from, you know, illegal spying that shouldn't have been happening, which is unconstitutional. So it's like there's illegal actions happening within illegal actions. They get away with whatever the fuck they can try to get away with here. So they take your information illegally, unconstitutionally, they prosecute you, and if you don't have a good defense attorney, they could put you in jail based on information they should have never had in the first place because they didn't go through the proper channels to get that information, and they violated the process. No, this is unacceptable, man. I mean, the Founding Fathers would be rolling over in their graves hearing about this. You have a protection from unreasonable search and seizure. and it's been interpreted by the Supreme Court, you have a right to privacy. So the idea that there's a fucking fake cell phone tower that listens to all your conversations, and if you're engaged in anything that's bad or wrong, that, you know, eventually you'll get arrested and you'll get in trouble, that is lunacy. That's not the country we're supposed to live in. That much more resembles a tyranny than a democracy. The only good news is that they might throw it out, but how long is it going to take? And how long have they been doing this, actually? And how long will it take for us to get back to a point where nobody's doing this? So he also goes on to explain, not every police department is doing this, but, you know, will that be the case sooner or later if this isn't nipped right now? Yeah, that's probably the case. Okay. All right, let's go to Representative Jim Sensenbrenner to talk a little bit about Planned Parenthood here. You guys probably, since you're normal people, you probably haven't heard of this insane fucking Planned Parenthood kabuki theater going on right now. You're about to see what's happening. Representative Jim Sensenbrenner is a well-known clown, and he tried to do some grandstanding at this ridiculous kabuki theater Planned Parenthood hearing that's happening this week. Let's watch.
You know, whether or not Planned Parenthood broke the law, when Congress sets budgeting priorities, you know, we have to decide what's important and what isn't, and which has a higher priority and should be funded, and which has a lower priority and should not be funded in the age of a $19 trillion deficit.
Right.
Now, could you please tell us why Planned Parenthood needs to get over $500 million of federal funding every year when there are other pressing needs such as feeding hungry children that maybe we should put that money into?
Let's be clear that Planned Parenthood is not getting any federal funding for abortions.
Well, money is fungible, Ms. Smith. You know, you and I know that money is fungible.
I don't believe that.
So the question is, you know, whether Congress should appropriate another $500 million plus to Planned Parenthood when we could be spending that money on feeding hungry children.
The answer to your riddle, smart guy, is we can do both. He makes it seem like the government can only do one thing, right? No, it can do multiple things, and both of those things should be pretty high on your priority list. We can do both. But are you ready for this? This is such an incredible fact. Guess what Jim Sensenbrenner voted against? The food stamp bill. The nerve. The nerve of this guy. Here he is lecturing somebody. You know, shouldn't we prioritize feeding hungry kids? What are you, against feeding hungry kids? No, but you are. You are. He's making it seem like a priority. He's got to feed the hungry kids before we fund Planned Parenthood. You voted against the bill that feeds the hungry kids? What an unbelievable hypocrite we're dealing with here. He voted against the farm bill. What's in the farm bill? It's two parts, the farm subsidies and food stamps. He voted against it. He voted against it. He's lecturing this woman. Why don't you want to feed hungry kids? You don't want to feed hungry kids. And I bet anything that woman, if she were in Congress, she would vote for the bill. It's all kabuki theater. It's all fake. And remember, this whole hearing that they're doing is happening because of the bullshit sting videos that were done against Planned Parenthood. The main claim of those videos was Planned Parenthood is selling baby parts for profit. That's what they claimed. That is categorically untrue. Fact-checking organizations looked into it. In fact, when they're talking about costs in the so-called sting videos, they're referring to the cost of transportation. See, they thought they were talking to medical researchers. In reality, these people were right-wing hacks pretending to be medical researchers. And so they thought they were going to help with curing diseases, and you had to transfer the fetal tissue in order to do that. And so when they talk about money, they're talking about how much it costs to ship fetal tissue. It turns out it's expensive because you can't just ship it like as a shirt or something like that. But they spin it, and they tried to make it seem like Planned Parenthood is selling baby parts, they say, for profit. That's not true. The whole hearing is based on a lie. It's based on a falsehood. They're trying to bring this down the same way they brought down Acorn with another doctored video, which was a hack job from day one. We know it's a hack job. It's always some right-wing prick going into the situation trying to take down an agency that does something like this. So you know they're coming at it from a biased perspective. It's clear. They almost let you know that they're biased. All right, so this guy, not only is he a hypocrite, not only is he a clown, also he's an economic know-nothing. He brought up the $19 trillion. He brings up a $19 trillion deficit. We don't have a $19 trillion deficit. We have a $486 billion deficit. Now you could say, Kyle, that's still a lot. But it's a big difference from $19 trillion. Isn't it slapstick? Of course it is. He doesn't know the difference between the deficit and the debt. How sad is that? We got a congressman here who doesn't know the difference between the deficit and the debt. He doesn't know that the debt is the accumulation of each individual deficit from the founding of the country. He also doesn't know that in terms of our debt-to-GDP ratio, which is the measure that really matters, we're pretty much average. You know, he makes it seem like, as we've heard many times from the right, we're the next Greece because of our unsustainable deficit. No, if you look at our debt-to-GDP ratio, it's not that bad. And remember, debt is the lifeblood of capitalism. If you have public debt, that means private growth. And again, economic know-nothing has no clue about this. He's talking out of his ass, and he goes from $19 trillion deficit, which we don't have, it's debt, to why are we giving $500 million to Planned Parenthood? $500 million. You want to talk about priorities? You're in the Republican Party, and you're going to talk about priorities. Your party only exists to give corporate welfare to Wall Street, to bail out Wall Street when they go bankrupt, and to give money to other corporations, and to set up negative tax rates for companies like Honeywell and GE. You're going to talk about priorities? You guys were for the Iraq War, which when all is said and done, will have cost $7 trillion. And you're going to talk about priorities and $500 million for Planned Parenthood. Meanwhile, if you're so concerned about hungry kids, you're so concerned about starving kids, Planned Parenthood helps in that department because they do contraception and they do the pill and they do education, which prevents unwanted kids. When kids are unwanted, those kids are a lot more likely to go hungry or be starving because their parents don't give a flying fuck about them. In every way, shape, and form, this guy is a joke of a human being. He's talking about serious issues, and he knows nothing about serious issues. For starters, if you're going to talk about how important it is to feed hungry kids, vote for the fucking bill which would do that. Asshole. Okay. Next. I got one more coming out of this Planned Parenthood hearing. I mean, this one is even more dramatic here. This congressman really puts on an act. You're about to see it. Republican Representative Trent Franks did some grandstanding at the Planned Parenthood hearing. Let's watch.
The fact is, Mr. Chairman, that more than 18,000 late-term pain-capable unborn babies were torturously killed without anesthesia in America in just the last year. Many of them cried and screamed as they died, but because it was amniotic fluid going over the vocal cords instead of air, we couldn't hear them. It is the worst human rights atrocity in the history of the United States of America.
Oh.
Now, I know that many of you on this committee will hold to the standard line and try to cloak all of this in the in the name of freedom of choice. But I beg you to open your own hearts and ask yourselves, what is so liberating about brutally and painfully dismembering living, helpless, little human babies?
I'm going to get to the facts in a second here. Just know what he's saying is not correct. If that were true, if what he was describing was the case, yeah, I'm pretty sure everybody would be against it. But what you're saying is false. What you're saying is not accurate, which is why we're against you. See, he's being dramatic, and he's going over the top, and he's making it seem like, I care so deeply about life. I'm so in favor of life that I'm for the death penalty, and I'm for every conceivable war that we've done in the Middle East. Don't look at that hypocrisy because I love life. No, again, like I said, what you're saying is inaccurate. Now, I'm going to get to those facts in a second, but did you hear that comment in the middle there? He said abortion is the worst human rights atrocity in U.S. history. That's so stupid. You might need to come out and do a public apology. I mean, I'm not one to play the O card often. Oh, I'm offended. Well, is the thing true or untrue? That's what matters. In this case, what he's saying is both untrue and offensive. The worst human rights atrocity in United States history. What about, I don't know, slavery? Nope, this is worse. Interesting. It's good to know that, you know, you take the concerns of the history of the United States very seriously when you downplay it and act like abortion is the worst ever. So abortion is worse than slavery. Abortion is worse than the Native American genocide. Abortion is worse than dropping the nuclear bombs. Abortion is worse than CIA torture. Abortion is worse than invading a country that didn't attack us and staying there for over a decade. And by the way, the minimum number of people, civilians, killed post that invasion, 200,000. Some of that because we riled up the Sunni-Shia tensions, and some of that directly because of our military. But no, abortion is worse than all that. Now, like I said at the beginning, I'm going to get to the facts. Well, here are the facts. Let's show the chart here from the Guttmacher Institute. See, these guys actually do science, and they do research, and they uncover facts. And what you're looking at here is a chart of when women have abortions. Now, this idiot went on and on about, oh my God, the pain of the babies who are being dismembered. What does this chart show here? You see that little sliver that says 1.2%? You know what that represents? That represents the abortions in the United States post-viability. Now, that 1.2% is comprised of people who have been raped. That 1.2% is to save the life of the mother. That 1.2% is because there's a fatal defect in the fetus, and the fetus isn't going to make it either way. That's what that 1.2% of abortions represents. You know what the other 99% of abortions are? They happen before viability, which means they happen before the creation of the nervous system in the fetus. You know what that means? There is literally no pain. So all this grand saying, the babies are screaming in the womb and the amniotic fluid is going over the vocal cords, all made up, all 100%, absolutely, positively, completely made up. Now understand, I'm even being kind to him with the lines that I'm drawing here, because not all scientists agree that, hey, you know, fetuses feel pain from viability and onward. Some scientists say that actually happens later. So even if you take the claim that the right-wingers like to make, which is from viability and onward, the fetus can feel pain, even by using your own standard, 99% of abortions in the United States of America have zero pain associated with them whatsoever. And for the record here, 89% of abortions occur before 12 weeks. And then we're getting into the realm of before that of gametes and zygotes and embryos and things of that nature. And this guy is so brainwashed and so crazy that he's in the group of people that say, you know, it's a human rights atrocity if you dare to get rid of an embryo or a zygote or a gamete. So let's have a conversation about that, buddy. I guess you believe that that's worse than slavery, right? The Plan B pill is worse than slavery. the pill is probably worse than slavery in this guy's mind. And the Native American genocide and nuking thousands of Japanese civilians. See, that this is the problem in American politics. Well, there's many problems in American politics, but one of the biggest problems is half of the debate that's happening in the establishment, so the elected Republican politicians, they're out to fucking lunch. They don't even agree on the basic facts and then have an argument over the interpretations of those facts. No, they say, no, we're fact-free over here, son. Forget the facts, forget the information, forget the data. I will just go out there and make shit up, and in the process, tar the other side as being in favor of human rights atrocities and acting like abortion is genocide. And then we all wonder why, oh, look at that, there was a bombing, a terrorist attack, an arson attack at a Planned Parenthood last week. Gee, I wonder why. Could it be because we have idiot elected Republican politicians screaming about how what we're doing right now, women's reproductive rights, that's worse than slavery, that's worse than the Native American genocide, that's worse than nuclear fucking bombs? Responsible, it's unethical, and most importantly, what they're saying is untrue. Don't buy into their bullshit. All right. I hope every single fucking human being on the internet, when this video hits YouTube, tweets that shit to Trent Franks and says, hey, fuckhead, learn some facts before you run your mouth, man. That really pisses me off, because it's this kind of shit which makes dumbasses believe that, oh, liberals are sitting there and allowing, you know, a genocide to go on or some shit. No, it's that you are simply wrong in what you think is the problem. You have made it up in your head, and it's largely based on religion. And by the way, read your Bible and you'll understand that that's not even in your Bible about being pro-life. And I shouldn't even frame it like that. About being anti-abortion is the more accurate way of putting it. Okay. All right, let's go to let's lighten it up a little bit here and talk about a guy who's in the closet. Story is reporting that an anti-gay hardware store owner is selling no gays allowed merchandise. They say the following, quote, Jeff Amminks, a hardware store owner in Washburn, Tennessee, said 300 people have signed a petition supporting not only his ban on gay customers, but merchandise related to it. So he said, quote, I'm just doing it because people have asked me for it. He's also selling merchandise bearing the phrase, choose God or gays, saying he makes no profit from the items and only makes enough to cover production costs. So he says, I'm not even doing it to make money. I'm doing it because I care so deeply about the issue that I'm going to do it because we don't want no gays here, and them gays is wrong. I'm not even making no money for doing this. Just fuck the gays. They say Amminks is also a Baptist pastor, and he implemented the ban at his store following the Supreme Court decision allowing gay marriage, saying Christians were the victims of a double standard preventing them from expressing their beliefs. Think about how ironic that is. As he's bragging about his no gays allowed merchandise, he's saying, they won't even allow me to express my beliefs. You're doing it right now, dipshit. The conversation you're having at that moment with the media, that's you expressing yourself. There's nobody coming to arrest you because you dislike gays. It only becomes a problem when you take away the rights of gays. When you say, I will not let you marry because I personally disagree with you two free adults marrying. Dense, fucking concrete for a head. And then, you ready for this? Classic, he said this. God created Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. I just don't agree with their lifestyle. I don't want any part of it. I don't want it around me, and I'll never agree with it. Dude, who are you trying to convince? Who are you trying to convince? You know, I got to do it. I got to say it because I think it's true. Never been another human being except maybe Brian Fisher and Rick Santorum. Deeper in the closet than this guy. You go out of your way to get merchandise made. No gays allowed. I don't like gays. I really don't like gays. You do a fucking interview. So I don't like gays. I'm not gay. I mean, I don't like gays. Why are you doing it? Why are you doing it? Why are you so defensive? Why are you so standoffish? It's because, as Dan Savage says, you're externalizing an internal struggle. That's what happens with so many of these guys, man. Now, understand, there are various studies that we've covered on the show that prove that this is the case. It's not everybody who's anti-gay, but it just so happens that when they are the most vocal against the gay community, it's usually because they have similar feelings that they're struggling with, and they don't think it's right for religious reasons or cultural reasons. And in a way, they're mad at gay people who have embraced it because they're jealous. Why can't I do that? I must punish them because they're enjoying themselves. I want to enjoy myself, but I can't. I got to stop myself from doing it. So I'm going to lash out at them. And no gays allowed shirt. And, you know, some people get mad when I bring up this theory. Again, I want to be clear. There are various studies that point to this. You can agree or disagree with it, but, you know, it's not just me saying it. And, you know, somebody made the counterpoint like, oh, yeah, so what are all white racist black? As if they're like, haha, gotcha. And my response to that is, of course not. Do they have a deep sense of insecurity? If you're like a really old white guy in the backwoods of Arkansas or Mississippi or Kentucky and you're deeply racist, is there something going on inside that person's head where they think like, fucking black guys get everything. They done got Kim Kardashian's ass. They got the bigger dicks. They're popular now. Women like them. I'm jealous of them. So blacks are inferior. And then usually the guys who say that, what? They got fucking two teeth in their mouth. They're, you know, wearing the Confederate flag hat. They're in overalls. They shit on themselves. So, there is probably an inferiority complex involved when it comes to racists. But in the case of really angry, really, you know, loud anti-gay people, I'm sure that secretly he's like, I'm craving some dick. I mean, no gays allowed. I'm wearing the shirt. I don't like gays. I don't think about gays. Now let's continue to talk about gays for about really long time because I like really talking about them and thinking about them. Am I saying all this out loud? That ain't good. Let me shut up. All right. Let's take a break here. When we come back, the International Business Times reported on a really interesting story regarding religion and its decline on college campuses. And later on, a hate crime done against a Sikh American. Yet again, people can't even get their bigotry and they can't even get their hatred right. Beyond pathetic. All right, stay right there, guys. Son of a bitch. All right, we're back. We're back. The International Business Times is reporting that religion is massively on the decline at college campuses. They say, quote, an annual survey of Harvard University's incoming freshman class revealed in September that more students identified as atheist or agnostic than as Roman Catholic or Protestant, suggesting millennials are turning away from traditional American faiths in a country that has long had a Christian majority. They continue, Harvard's poll of beliefs and lifestyles of the class of 2019 found that 21% of incoming freshmen said they identified as agnostic and 16.6% identified as atheist. Meanwhile, 17.1% identified as Catholic and 17% as Protestant. In other words, 38% of the incoming freshman class said they were agnostic or atheist, while just 34% said they were Catholic or Protestant. Some 12% of the class said they identified as other. In the other category would be a mix of things, you know, deists, New Age, spiritualism stuff, or even other religions. Like, there's just a smaller percentage of other religions there, so that includes Hindu, Muslim, so on and so forth. So this is right in line with the national statistics in terms of the trend. So as of right now, about 3% of Americans identify as atheists. But at the same time that that's the case, and that is admittedly a small number, over 20% identify as non-religious. So that's, again, it's a slightly different category, and it's a bigger umbrella, but that includes agnostics, that includes deists, that includes, you know, like I said, the New Age spiritual kind of people who don't believe in a god or a religion, but just say, yeah, I believe in something, I just don't know what, the people who say that nature is my god, stuff like that. So we're looking at an important trend here. Now, unfortunately, as we've covered before, this is not the trend worldwide. Worldwide, the growth of, you know, irreligiosity, I guess you could call it, is much slower. But particularly in the United States and in some other Western nations, you're seeing a trend in that direction. Now, the thing that struck me here is the people they asked in this poll, so it's a higher percentage than even the country at large here that say they're non-religious, perhaps that's because they're going to Harvard. When you're going to Harvard, not in every case, nepotism is involved sometimes with people who get into Harvard or Yale or Ivy League schools. We all know those cases, famous cases. But by and large, if you're going to an institution like Harvard, probably pretty smart. And, you know, you're less likely to be religious. Now, that's not to smear or put down religious people. There are plenty of religious people that are very intelligent. I mean, we were just, I just read a story yesterday about how Stephen Colbert is actually a devout Catholic. Now, he goes on to explain in the piece, which was on the Daily Beast, well, logic and faith are separate. I know I can't, logic does not point me in the direction of God. Logic does not point me in the direction of faith. But nonetheless, you have to feel it. I am a faithful person, and that's my belief. So I get it. Like, that's what I would call one of the smart man's dodges, where it's like, faith is over there in my mind, logic is over here in my mind. I'll be rigidly logical about everything in my life, but this one thing, I'm giving myself permission to just say, I'm going to believe what I want to believe. That's certainly more respectable than the fundamentalists, who oftentimes use their religion for every negative, hateful thing you can ever imagine. So liberal religion, moderate religion, the people who know that their faith is faith and not fact, that's better. But I think that on some level, if you're that kind of a person, it's almost like you're flirting with agnosticism, you're flirting with atheism, you're almost there, but at the end of the day, you're like, oh, no, for whatever reason, cultural identity, ethnic identity, family reasons, whatever, you're still holding on to the remnants of religion. And what we're seeing here is it's an increasing trend where people are willing to take that next step, where they say, no, I am an agnostic. No, I am an atheist. No, I am a secular humanist. No, this is my belief. And I like that, man, because I like it when people can kind of cut the chains or cut the strings, the cultural strings that have in many ways shaped them to make them who they are, where everybody, you know, or I should say most people love their family, their friends, their parents, the society they were raised in. They have nothing but lovely memories of it. And a lot of people fall into that trap of thinking, since they are good people, since I like my environment, therefore they're correct. They are factually right about the things they believe. No, those are two separate things. They can be lovely people. It can be a great environment. You can have great friends. You can live in a peaceful region. But at the same time, it could be the case that the philosophical underpinnings, the religious underpinnings of the beliefs in that area are not true. And I would say that's the case in virtually every area that's religious. Whether you live in the Amazon and you worship tribal gods, whether you worship back in the day the Greek gods or the Roman gods, or you believe in Shinto or Buddhism or Hinduism or whatever, you know, it's more of just a weird philosophy that's not correct that you're holding on to than anything else. So I respect it and I like it when people say, no, I don't believe you. They look at culture, they look at their own culture in the face and they go, wrong, wrong. I thought about it, sorry. And the thing is, I think we all know on some level, or again, a lot of us know on some level, if you were born, you know, in wherever, Afghanistan, you'd probably be Muslim, probably be a devout Muslim. If you were born in India, depending on what region you were born in and what time you were born in, you might believe in Hinduism. If you were born in, you know, a evangelical region in the United States, you'll probably be evangelical. Back in the day, you were born in some sort of Native American tribe, you would believe in the different rituals and the gods that they worship. If you were, born in ancient Rome, you believe in the Roman gods. The list goes on and on. So it is totally and utterly arbitrary. And it just requires a little bit of bravery and a little bit of, you know, stone-cold logic to be able to step outside of your own perspective and go, oh, if I look at this, you know, from as objective a position as I can, it looks like all the different religions are wrong. They're, you know, just a series of myths and beliefs that we've based culture on, but I'm willing to use my own mind, my own logic, my own reason, and perhaps move forward in that direction as opposed to hanging on to something which I would argue is probably past its due date and past its relevance in the age of enlightenment and in the age of the internet and in the age of all the other modern amenities we have. All right. All right, we have some good news now. Before we were at the beginning of the show, we were talking about the downside in California and the corruption and the money in politics. This, we actually have a very good story here. We have some good news coming out of California, Reuters reports, quote, the California Assembly voted for the first time on Wednesday to allow physician-assisted suicide of terminally ill patients, sending the bill to the state Senate, where supporters are hoping to meet a Friday deadline for final passage. The lower house of the legislature, meeting in a special session in Sacramento, approved the End of Life Option Act on a vote tallied by supporters at 43-34. The Senate adopted a similar bill in June, but it failed amid opposition from the Roman Catholic Church. Wowzers. How sad is that? So there's a Democratic discussion, a debate. When you look at the polls, they're on the side of physician-assisted suicide. But the Catholic Church stepped in and was like, ex-nay on the smart thing, skay. Forget that. Get rid of it. And it didn't get through. Now, a lot of this is happening. The renewed debate is happening because of Brittany Maynard. Now, we covered her story multiple times on the show. We did multiple segments discussing her. I think she's a hero. She brought about this new push because she personally was suffering through a terminal illness, and she said, I need that comfort, I need that pillow there, which is the escape button, which is, hey, if the pain is too excruciating and I know I'm going to be in pain for too long and I can't deal with it, I can't bear it, well, then I want to be able to have my family around me. We all kiss each other, say we love each other, we spend our last moments together, and then I go out peacefully. So she argued for this. She did a campaign for this, talking about how this is a right, and she had to move because she was in California. They didn't have the right to do this. So she had to move somewhere else to then have the right to die, and she was saying, why should I have to move? Fuck you. Fuck you. Who are you to tell me you got to move to have this right? That shouldn't be the case. So she fought for the right thing. She fought to give people the opportunity, the option, the right to say, I'm done here if the pain gets too much. And we've discussed other court cases that are currently ongoing about this, and it just so happens that the California Assembly approved of the bill. Now, it still has to get through two committees and the Senate. We don't know if that's going to happen. And also, Jerry Brown, the governor, has not taken a position on the bill yet, which is weird. I don't like that. I feel like he should already be out swinging in favor of this, but he hasn't yet. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. But as of right now, it's only Oregon, Washington, Montana, and Vermont at the moment that have right to die, as they call it, physician-assisted suicide. And the argument I'd make to people if they're concerned about where this will lead is, as of right now, all we're discussing is terminally ill patients. That's it. That's what the discussion is about. Now, I think there is a different debate to be had as to whether or not you broaden it out, because some things can be excruciatingly painful but not terminal. Somebody in that situation wants to die, should they be allowed to? I don't think I have the right to tell that person no if they really decide yes. So it is a broader issue. It is a more complex issue. Now, I've expressed my mixed feelings on that as to whether or not you allow doctor-assisted suicide with heavy regulations, or if you go uber libertarian and just say, you know, whatever anybody wants, it's their right. So it is a more complex issue. But as of right now, all we're talking about is for terminal illnesses. That one, I do not consider a difficult issue in any way. That one is, mind your fucking business and let them decide for themselves. They're going through some stuff. You can't relate to it. So they should have a right to die peacefully as opposed to an excruciating pain. So I would urge California to do the right thing here, and like I said, we're going to have to wait and see. Okay, now. Whew. Let's get to unfortunate bigotry. An elderly Sikh American was assaulted by a man in Chicago. Raw Story reports, quote, just days before the anniversary of the September 11th attacks, Indrajit Singh Mukher said that he was driving to the grocery store when a man repeatedly cut him off. Mukher pulled over to the side of the road to let the man go around him, but instead the man stopped, reached into his car, and began punching him. Mukher lost consciousness and suffered a fractured cheekbone and lacerations to his cheek. After being transported to the hospital, he recalled the man yelling, you ready for this? Terrorist, go back to your country, Bin Laden, and other racial slurs. So yet again, this is a case of an idiot who can't even get his hate right. I mean, it's pathetic that guys like this hate in the first place, but when you can't even be accurate in your hatred, that's just, I mean, God damn, that's dumb. I mean, that's really dumb. And the idea of, like, go back to your country, this is his country. This is his country. But see the mindset of a bigot? See the mindset of an ultra-right winger? The idea is, you know, come on. It's not only just the country for white people. You should be conservative Republicans, and at no time in the past, however many, decades, can you have immigrated here, or you're like, your great-grandparents couldn't have immigrated here. Like, we spoke about it before, like Conservapedia did to me, where they said, I'm an immigrant, made it up, I'm not an immigrant, because, I have, back in the day, Polish and Italian ancestry. So they read that as, oh, immigrant came, tried to take over the fucking country. So in other words, a lot of these guys still have the same mindset of Italians who came over here, well, you're not the real Americans. Irish who came over here, you're not the real Americans. So in other words, the only people who are real Americans, conservative, white, Republican, Southern people who are WASPs, white Anglo-Saxon Protestants. Everybody else is you're just visiting. You know, you're not a real American. I mean, if you have brown skin and you're born here, fuck off. Fuck off. Just like Donald Trump was recently saying, I want to get rid of birthright citizenship. Birthright citizenship. That's part of the Constitution. He's like, Constitution's Constitution. They got darker skin. They're Hispanic. Fuck them. This is the mindset, guys. This is the mindset. And to the point where they're so stupid. Take a Sikh. And they're like, number one, you're a Muslim. Number two, you're a fundamentalist Muslim. Number three, Bin Laden. Terrorist. And they beat the shit out of him. So this is, unfortunately, this isn't really an isolated incident. This happens often. According to the Southern Poverty Law Center, attacks on Muslims after 9/11, quote, skyrocketed some 1,600%, and as recently as 2010, some 160 anti-Muslim hate crimes were committed. And we see this kind of prejudice targeted at multiple different groups. We've been covering the Black Lives Matter movement and what they've been dealing with. We cover anti-Semitic crime, which is unfortunately all too common in the United States as well, but it's even more common in Europe at the moment too, as is anti-Muslim bigotry and crimes. That's happening a lot in Europe too. We just covered that story recently out of London, a new report which tracked all the different hate crimes, and it's been surging because of instability and various different issues people are dealing with. So it's a sad thing, man. Stuff like this is just beyond upsetting. How in the year 2015, there's still so many people that have utterly bought into the dogma of tribalism. My group good, your group bad. You don't look like me, I'm a hurt you. And of course, the massive irony of it all is, no doubt the person who beat this guy's ass, called him a terrorist, called him Bin Laden, the entire time he did it, he's thinking, I'm being so moral here. I'm the one protecting the right value system, protecting the good people. And in the process of doing that right, you do violence, but you're the moral one. You're the good one. No, you're the problem. Violence is wrong no matter who does it. So we need to get through our minds that we don't divide things into groups as the problem or whatever. It's more actions. Actions are the problem. Yes, you can say statistically, you know, this group does a lot more shit than that group. An ultra-right-wing group is much more likely to do violence than some sort of centrist group or some sort of secular humanist group, no doubt about it. But primarily, the important thing is you condemn the actions so as to let everybody know the actions are wrong and we need to try to avoid them in the future, down the road, and avoid them right now. Okay. How much time I got left? I got 20 minutes, not 20, 10 minutes left. What the fuck am I saying? All right, let me squeeze in two more stories here. Foreignpolicy.com is reporting that Saudi Arabia banned the most recent issue of National Geographic magazine because of an article about Pope Francis. Now, it's not the case that it, just because it's any old article, well, that's why they're banning it. No, it was the specifics about what was in the article. So here's what they say. Quote, Pope Francis has won praise around the world for advancing a more humble, tolerant version of Catholicism, but there's one country that he evidently hasn't won over. Saudi Arabia banned the August issue of the National Geographic's Arabic edition, whose cover featured Francis standing in the Sistine Chapel, due to what the magazine called cultural reasons. Saudi censors might have also seen dangerous implications for the Wahhabi state in how National Geographic framed its coverage, as the cover referred to Francis leading a quiet revolution to reform the church. An editor's note lauded Pope Francis for moving to revitalize the church by making changes that will dislodge some of the ingrained principles of the followers of the church. Its argument, however, went beyond Catholicism. It made the case that religious institutions must adapt to a rapidly changing world. It's not hard to see why that could be read as a challenge to Saudi Arabia's Wahhabi religious authorities, who insist on a literal interpretation of the Quran. Wahhabis strive for a return to the practices of the first generation generations of Muslims from the 7th century. The notion that religion should be fluid and change with the times is precisely the idea that they are arrayed against. This government is our government's bestie, right up there with Israel. The U.S., Israel, and Saudi Arabia. You know, they're the kids that are always together in the lunchroom. And no matter how much their individual practices may differ, they still love each other. Now, a lot of that has to do with business reasons, among other things. But think about that. One of our top allies is saying, we're not even going to allow in a magazine that discusses Pope Francis because the particulars of the piece say, maybe liberal religion is a good idea. Maybe moderate religion is a good idea. Maybe we don't hold on to the most ultra-conservative, backwards ideas that are espoused by all the different religions. They say, no, no, no. Can't even entertain that idea. Entertain that idea. Now, why would, you know, somebody say, I'm not even going to let you read that opinion. Why would they do that? You know why they do that. Because they know they can't win the argument. So you might as well not have the argument. Say, oh, sidestep here. We're not even going to let you read a differing opinion because we're afraid what will happen if you read that. You might think, well, that makes sense. That makes sense. Why can't we, you know, modernize a little bit to the point where we pick out better parts of the Quran, better parts of doctrine that are the good parts? So, I mean, you know, we've gone through this before, but there are parts of the Quran which are just flat out anti-racism. There are parts that are pro-charity. There are parts that say, what's the phrase again? You don't force your religion on anybody. No compulsion in religion. So there are good parts in there as well. But unfortunately, with Wahhabist regimes and with Salafists, they go, I don't care about the good parts. I'm going to take all the ultra-conservative fucked up shit and force that down everybody's throat. But wait, if there's a kinder, gentler, more open-minded liberal interpretation, why not go down that road? Why not say, even if you think it's a stretch to interpret it this way, why not say, well, when they talk about jihad, they're talking about an internal battle to find peace and righteousness. Now, again, you and I might say, well, I don't think that's the most straightforward interpretation, and we may be right about that, but if there's the opportunity, if there's the option to take that and use that interpretation to modernize and move towards a more tolerant, open-minded, kind future, why wouldn't you do that? But they say, no, not only are we not going to do that, we're not even going to entertain the opinion. We're going to nip it in the bud. We don't want you to even hear it. We don't even want you to think that's an option. Who does that? You know, I'll tell you who does that. Bad people. Bad people do that. People who are married to their rigid ideology and their dogmatism, and people who are ultra-conservative and are not interested in becoming better people, not interested in improving, that's who does that. And this is our bestie. We're so scared. Oh, my God, ISIS, ISIS, ISIS. ISIS is fucking horrible. They're a monstrosity. They're the worst. The Saudi government is also beheading people for atheism, also beheading people for sorcery, also beheading people for drug smuggling. This is what's going on, guys, and this is our buddy. And it's beyond pathetic to see this. And I would say to the leaders of Saudi Arabia, modernize or become irrelevant. The world's going to continue to change around you. The fact that you stay there, I'm going to hold on tighter to my rigid idiocy. I'm never going to let it go. I'm never going to let it go. I'm never going to let it go. Well, everybody else is walking away, son. TikTok. Sure, you'll be able to get some angry people, some crazy people, some dumb people, whatever. But a lot of people are going to go, that smells funky. I don't like it. I'm going to go over here and take this better approach. And they'll cry and they'll scream and they'll bitch and they'll moan. You know, that's the conservatives in the Vatican are doing that right now. Right now. But Pope Francis is like, oh, you think you're going to hold on to power and there's a future for you in the religion interpreting it that way? No. I'm the future, Pope Francis is saying, with a more open-minded approach. Well, not only does that reformation and that revolution make sense in Catholicism, it also makes sense in Islam, it also makes sense in every other religion, and they're scared to death of even hearing the opposing position. Okay, next. NewJersey.com is reporting that a woman from East Orange pleaded guilty to doing a fatal penis enlargement surgery in 2011. So they say, quote, Cassia Rivera admitted to delivering the silicone injection that ultimately killed 22-year-old Justin Street in exchange for her guilty plea to reckless manslaughter. Prosecutors recommended a sentence of 5 years in state prison. Authorities said Rivera injected silicone into Street's penis. The injection shot directly into Street's bloodstream, shutting down his organs, and he died as a result the following day. Medical examiner later determined Street died from a silicone embolism. She admitted that she's not a doctor, but she did it either way. She has no license, and she has no clue what the fuck she's doing. Oh, and to put the cherry on top, she tried to bribe the jury. Now, it was her friend that did that, but she was like, I never told him to do it. He did it out of his own free will. Yeah, I'm sure. So she tried to give two different jurors $5,000. They went to the authorities, so there's another charge that she's facing, essentially. How many stories have we done in just the past, like, 2 months of botched plastic surgeries, including botched penis enlargement? One person is mutilated. They say it's all, like, raw and smaller and infected. And this guy fucking died, man. You don't want to be that guy. Don't be that guy who died because your penis enlargement surgery went wrong, because then forever you're that guy. Don't get that surgery. If you're going to get it, at least try to go to a legitimate surgeon and spend a lot of money. But if you're going to go to, you know, somebody on the street who doesn't know what the fuck they're doing, you can't expect anything different. Stuff like this is going to happen, and it's terrible. And the government needs to crack down, and the government needs to regulate it more efficiently, because apparently we have an epidemic of people doing penis enlargement surgeries that got no clue what the fuck they're doing. Don't do it. That's the last part on your body that you should ever fuck with in a way where you're unsure how it's going to end up. All right, guys, I'm out of time. Mwah. I'll see you tomorrow.